Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit.
From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Coming up on DTNS, Twitter has a new way to handle conversations, tech to keep you from getting hit by a car, and Shannon Morse and Bill Detweiler tell us some of the coolest things they saw at CES 2020. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, January 8th, 2020, in Las Vegas. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Shannon Morse.
And I'm Bill Detweiler.
And I'm Roger, speaking off camera, the show's producer.
Because he's busy producing, folks. We were just talking about some of the details of CES, the food and the crowds and all of that. If you want to get that conversation, you got to get Good Day Internet at our Patreon, patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start this show with a few tech things you should know.
Apple announced it paid $155 billion to developers since 2008. That's up from $120 billion in January of last year, which put total sales of about $50 billion in 2019. After the assumed 70% of app sales developers take, that would give Apple $15 billion in revenue. That growth is 2.9% higher than $34 billion in 2018, but a slowdown from 30% growth in 2017.
Cybersecurity research firm Checkpoint Research says it found multiple vulnerabilities in the TikTok app. One let a hacker spoof text messages to seem like they were coming from TikTok, send a fake link, then access part of a user's TikTok account. A hacker could also redirect a user to malicious websites that looked like TikTok's homepage. Checkpoint says it told TikTok about the vulnerabilities in November, and they have since been fixed.
Chrome's latest update for desktop and mobile will automatically cut back on notifications for users who tend to block them, those requests often, as well as sites with low opt-in rates. Users can also manually opt in to have fewer notifications in their settings as well.
Samsung forecast its quarterly operating profit to fall 34% to 7.1 trillion won for Q4. That's less than analysts expected, so it's actually good news and indicates that memory chip prices might have bottomed out, furthering the belief that chip prices will rebound this year. Samsung's forecasted earnings from chips and mobile devices look like they're going to beat expectations. Mobile sales rose, partly due to overseas losses in market share by Huawei that went to Samsung. There was also a boost in that. Well, the premium phone sales became a beast. There was a boost in that. Samsung's display business lagged, however. Samsung shut down an LCD production line in September and suffered from falling prices and reduced demand for TV and smartphone screens, as well as competition from their Chinese rivals in that space. But mostly good news for Samsung.
Spotify announced streaming ad insertion for Spotify podcast ads that give advertisers who have ads on Spotify podcasts and also the podcast creators data like ad impressions, frequency, reach, plus anonymized age, gender, and device type. Spotify's SAI tech will start for Spotify's own original and exclusive shows. Puma tested SAI with host read ads in its original podcast, Jemele Hill is Unbothered. Spotify says it has about 500,000 podcasts on the platform and hundreds of originals.
All right, let's talk about one of the products that's emblematic of a sleep tech trend here. Linksys VLOP mesh routers are the ones that analyze your Wi-Fi signal for small delays. They announced those back in the fall. They detect motion. So when the feature's turned on, it can give you an alert if it detects something is moving around in your house, but without having to have a camera see everything. At CES, Linksys is introducing wellness pods. So using some artificial intelligence software from Origin Wireless, the pods measure disruption in radio waves between the two Linksys VLOP nodes to track your breathing patterns and then be able to use some machine learning to detect your sleep quality. It can also detect things like falls, which would be good as you're getting older. Linksys Aware software already does that measurement of the motion detection 30 times a second, add the wellness pod into the network, and that increases to 1,500 times a second, which is why they're able to get the minute measurements that are needed to check your breathing. Linksys Aware costs you $299 a month right now for the motion, but if you get the wellness pod, then that'll be part of that service as well. And the wellness pods arrive later this year, though they didn't give us a price for those yet.
Yeah, I think that's really cool, actually, because there's a lot of technology or a lot of applications for camera tech. For camera technology that maybe we don't want to use because of privacy issues, especially in this is for home and for sleep, but especially in the workplace. And if you have a jurisdiction where there's a lot of legal restrictions on the use of cameras for privacy rules, then sort of non-photographic technology like this that still accomplishes the same thing, either tracking motion, tracking movement, tracking this, is a real benefit without the privacy concerns. It gives you the benefits without the downsides.
People don't want to put a camera in their bedroom.
That's right. Well, some people might.
Sometimes, quite often. Yeah.
I feel the exact same way, Bill. Privacy was a huge concern of mine when I was reading this. And as soon as it said, like, this is a cameraless detection using the radio waves, sounds really fascinating. It sounds like something that could be very accurate, especially since it's checking so often. That also sounds like, since it is just checking and it doesn't seem like it's going to be pinging out a lot of information, I don't think it's going to affect your network too much. Yeah, but, you know, time will tell if that's going to be a use case issue. But I don't think it will. Love that it's free if you already have the per month fee, or if you already pay for the annual fee with the Linksys annual subscription. So that's cool too. I'm glad that they aren't making you pay more.
And I know this is new, but I would love to know, after there's a little bit more research between something like breathing patterns or like what my Fitbit is measuring, which is heart rate, how they differ, if one ends up being better than the other, if a combination of both is something that can be achievable, where we really get a better sense of how we're sleeping at night, kind of comes into play.
Yeah, could you combine different data points for more accuracy? That'd be cool.
And it'd be really cool if there was some, you know, we talk about interoperability all the time, right?
Yeah.
If there was some standard. So we were talking about sleep tech earlier, and so Philips has an updated version of their headband.
Oh, right.
It tracks your REM stage for sleep to help you fall asleep, to wake you up when you're in light stage of sleep. They have a band that goes across your chest to help you combat snoring. It'd be cool if you could pair that kind of data with your fitness tracker, whatever you're wearing on your wrist, with something like this from Linksys, and get a more complete picture of your just overall health and wellness.
That's kind of advanced trend, because we know that Apple, Google, and Amazon are working on an open standard for smart home interoperability. You could sort of see if they're able to pull that off down the road, some sort of health data, you know, instead of all having to pick HealthKit or Amazon or something else, right? Or Fitbit, which will be Google, you know, within a few months probably. I would look for that. I would look for some kind of standards organization to start organizing at some point. It's a good long-term trend to spot.
Well, some interesting news coming out of Twitter that will affect Threads going forward. Twitter's Director of Product Management, Suzanne Gee, announced that Twitter is preparing a setting for conversation participants on the compose screen. It will have four options. So let's say you're about to compose a tweet. You want to hit send. What are you going to do? You have global, you have group, you have panel, and you have statements. Global will let anyone reply. That's how it works now. Group will limit replies to people you follow and also mention. Mm-hmm. So you're following the people and they're also in the tweets. Panel is just people mentioned in the tweets. And statement would be a tweet with no replies allowed. I just want to say something and throw it out into the void and you can look at it and that's the end of it. Twitter will launch experiments by the end in Q1 with the idea of launching it globally by the end of the year. Z also said in a threaded conversation view that's been tested in the public prototype beta app will come to the main Twitter app in the coming months. And it's important to note that you can still quote tweet somebody. It doesn't mean that you can't sort of throw your hat in the ring when it comes to the conversation, but it won't be in the thread itself.
Someone.
Yeah.
Just won't be part of the thread.
Unless they've blocked you, you can still do that, but you're kind of going to be coming from left field at that point.
Well, it makes sense with this threaded conversation interface coming that they'd want to make that a more quality thread so it's not just full of random stuff. And this is a way to control what kind of conversation it's going to be.
I like that the person who's starting the thread has this kind of control, because there's been lots of times when I just like straight up want to just echo chamber something out there, and I don't necessarily want replies, whether it's just like complaining about a piece of tech and I don't necessarily need to know how to fix it, even though everybody on Twitter wants to tell me how.
Right?
I just want to vent. Yeah, so I would love this idea of like turning off comments, basically, which is very similar to a lot of other social networks. I think it's really cool and would be also useful for like harassment and stuff, even though, again, you can still quote tweet.
Yeah.
Prototude in our chat room says that they will use the statement no reply option and end all tweets with "I have spoken."
I mean, and mic drop.
Does anyone think, though, that this changes the nature of Twitter in and of itself? Is it a big enough change?
Well, I think
the platform.
I was talking to a friend about this earlier today, and I said, "What do you think about this?" And he said, "Okay, well, let's say there is somebody who tweets something incendiary, or maybe they're, you know, the political slant, or some other reason that a tweet is polarizing, and they want to follow a bunch of people that they know are going to give positive feedback, and so they're kind of controlling whatever the thread ends up looking like after the fact." That is, you know, potentially a problem. It of course depends on the content of the tweet and what the person was going for originally, but I can see where threads, which kind of half work anyway, as they stand now, it seems like, okay, you have a little bit more control as an individual, but it almost sounds to me like it's going to confuse somebody all that much more about what the public sentiment is over something that would have a lot of conversation if they're not paying enough attention based on these new rules.
This doesn't fix Twitter.
No.
Okay. I don't think it's meant to fix Twitter.
Right, yeah.
But it fixes a specific use case, which is thread getting hijacked. I think we've all been part of something where we say something about one thing and then other people jump in and start having a conversation with each other and they weren't even part of the original thing. And you're like, can I unsubscribe from
this? To my own thread. And I think from a broadcaster perspective, you know, it's really interesting because so often you'll put out a news story. Just not to take it in a political bent, but since we're here at CES, we had people cover Ivanka Trump.
Sure.
At her interview today, the keynote. And immediately the threat, you know, it was like, hey, here's what Ivanka Trump said. It was our straight news coverage of the event. And immediately it gets hijacked why are you know, people on both sides of the spectrum sort of commenting on that. And so as someone that just wants to say, hey, we wrote about this, why don't you come and read it? And then, you know, if you... You know, it allows the conversation not to be hijacked by people that just want to vent.
Well, and that's a great example because you could put that out as a statement and then get a bunch of replies. But someone can quote retweet and start their own conversation with other people about it.
Yes.
However they want. And that's fine. Google's Project Zero has a good reputation for finding vulnerabilities in all kinds of software, not just Google, but often rubs the companies with the vulnerabilities the wrong way because of its disclosure policy. Up until now, the policy has been to disclose a vulnerability as soon as it's fixed, whether the company that fixed the vulnerability wants it disclosed or not. And you've seen that happen with Microsoft and Google and a lot of other companies in Google. So for 2020, Project Zero will try out a policy of disclosing vulnerabilities only after the 90-day window has expired, unless the company fixing the vulnerability agrees with Project Zero to disclose early. So fixed or not, at 90 days, they disclose. If the company says, you know what, we're good, you can go ahead and disclose early, then Project Zero will. The idea is to allow for multiple patches that are more thorough to be applied before disclosure, therefore encouraging better patch adoption by users. They're finding some people saying like, look, it actually encourages us to slap a fix out there the way you're doing it now. Give us the full 90 days so we can put a patch out and keep working on it in silence until the 90 days is up. It also means an incomplete fix would just be put into the 90-day report rather than generating a new deadline. So it also discourages incomplete fixes because you don't get extra time by not having a complete fix. At the end of 12 months, Project Zero is going to decide whether to make the changes permanent or not.
I mean, I think this is a great idea, actually. Yeah. I mean, it's always a tough decision to err on the side of disclose or not disclose. Does disclosing encourage companies to fix their crappy code, or does it allow attackers to use, you know, those vulnerabilities? And so I think this sounds like maybe more of a happy medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So 90 days is the pretty much the average of what most companies do for bug bounties. I am curious to hear what like my InfoSec friends have to say about this, since a lot of them do work in bug bounties, because they would probably have some pros and cons to share as well. I do think it's good because, as you mentioned, a lot of companies just try to push those patches out there way too quickly. They don't actually fix the issue, and then that might keep their consumers vulnerable. However, I am also concerned that if a company does not agree to that, let's go ahead and disclose early before the 90 days, if they do fix something, like say within 30 days, and they don't actually get that disclosure out there until 90 days, that's an additional 60 days that people could have been like updating their products that they may not hear about it because it hasn't been publicized.
Yep.
So if they don't do push updates, for example, then I would like to see like maybe some kind of additional agreement. Like if you do fix this in 30 days, even if you don't agree, maybe we could update it. But
I think that's why they're doing the 12-month test, yeah, is to say, look, the reason we don't do it this way now is we're worried about that. We're worried about users, right? But we know that's a small percentage chance. So we're hoping it's just a small percentage chance of people that will have a fix and not want to disclose. Mm-hmm. Let's try it for 12 months and see how it goes. I think that's a smart way to do it.
Big trend here at CES this year, smart security products. And in that vein, August introduced a version of its smart lock that's easy to install and also doesn't need a hub. The new Wi-Fi smart lock is 45% smaller and 20% thinner than the old Smart Lock Pro. And as its name implies, the Wi-Fi smart lock connects directly to Wi-Fi without needing a hub. Also means it's not Z-Wave compatible, so might not be the right choice if you've got a Z-Wave hub. August locks have always been bolted into the back half of the lock rather than requiring to replace it. Works with Amazon Voice Services, Google Assistant, and Apple's HomeKit, and is powered by two CR123 batteries. An option in the app lets you automatically order replacement batteries from Amazon when it's close to time to replace them, and it will be available in black or silver later this year, although no official price yet.
Yeah, smart locks have gotten simpler at the show, it seems like. We've seen NFC smart locks that are offline. We've seen ones that are powered by infrared, collimated laser beams, and all kinds of stuff. It's really been interesting to see the wide variety.
And not just smart locks, but we've also seen a lot of IoT in general starting to go very hubless. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty awesome that all of these companies are trying to make it easier for folks to implement. Maybe that will open up more people to vulnerabilities. So hopefully Google Project Zero will be checking on all those new smart home devices coming out, because that might still be a problem. But yeah, it's cool. It looks like a really nice device. I know that there have been smart lock vulnerabilities in the past, so hopefully August is doing a good job of making sure that's not an issue with this new product. But it sounds like they're using the same kind of implementation as the other version that they already have on the market.
Right, the hubbed version, yeah, not the hubless version.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to replace the August that I have now with the new one. I still have the old one that requires Bluetooth.
Uh-huh.
Your
phone. So,
yeah.
I mean, and we were talking about interoperability earlier. This is what I think with all these IoT devices and smart devices, whether they're locks or cameras or your light bulbs, you know, it needs to be easy and simple. I was talking to someone earlier today about this very thing, and they're like, I don't want 15 apps on my phone, one for my lights, one for my lock, one for my cameras, one for this, to be able to control all these devices. I just want to be able to do it through Apple, through my, you know, HomePod, through my Echo devices, through whatever it is,
Samsung,
Google Assistant, whatever
it is
you have. I want to be able to have them all work together and be simple and easy to use.
Just keep it secure. Make sure these companies aren't sacrificing the security of the product to make it more convenient for consumers. I realize like convenience is really important, but a lot of companies just overlook the security that a lot of these IoT products should have.
All right, this one's a little bit high concept, so bear with me. Ars Technica reports on Harman's implementation of vehicle-to-pedestrian systems, or V2P, you'll hear it said sometimes, meant to help cars avoid hitting people on foot, or cyclists, falls into this as well. The Harman system uses 5G peer-to-peer signals to detect a smartphone in the vehicle's path. So if a smartphone's in your path, it's likely on a person. The vehicle not only gets the info, but the pedestrian or cyclist phone gets an alert too. Now, there's a lot of questions about how this is going to be implemented and how that alert gets to the phone and how the person notices that it's there. But the idea is that both the car and the pedestrian get an alert that says, hey, look out. V2P is not new, but Ars Technica's Jonathan M. Gitlin notes that Savari announced the New York City Department of Transportation will deploy its SmartCross V2P system, which can alert pedestrians about traffic light status, as well as vehicle-to-pedestrian-enabled vehicles when pedestrians are present. So we may finally be starting to see this technology that's been around for a long time be implemented. A lot of people thought it was going to be vehicle-to-vehicle, but there's been problems getting everybody to agree how to play in that ballpark. It may be vehicle-to-pedestrian hits first.
You know, it could be. I mean, there's so much that's happening behind the scenes with 5G, you know, with the ultra-low latency, with the high bandwidth that you really need to have vehicle-to-vehicle, vehicle-to-infrastructure, and vehicle-to-person kind of communication in real time. Mm-hmm. I think we're just starting to see some of these technologies enter that kind of real world like use case test. So I'm excited to see how this starts that transition to autonomous vehicles, truly autonomous vehicles, vehicles as a service, mm-hmm. you know, and how that affects sort of transportation in general, whether you're walking or whether you're in a car.
And Shannon, you mentioned this before the show that, you know, the timing of all of this is really important. I mean, this is essentially the equivalent of me being like, someone's about to hit Tom. Watch out. Is Tom going to run out of the way in time? Is that enough time for him to be like, heads up, oh, I'm in danger kind of thing?
Yeah.
That's case by case.
It's a big integration question, especially how are they going to make sure that that message is received in time to make sure the pedestrian is not run over while they're walking across a crosswalk.
I mean, pedestrian deaths are on the rise while like in-car deaths are declining.
Yeah.
So this is a problem that needs to be solved. And I think the idea is, well, some kind of alert is better than having no alert.
Right.
You know,
and having both the car and the pedestrian in that scenario, having an alert at the same time,
so maybe
does double up on
you have
safety.
Like a double chance of somebody at least seeing that notification.
Right.
So either the pedestrian stops or maybe the car stops. Or
I can imagine
down.
A lot of people will have earbuds on or earphones on if this is a problem, if they're not paying attention, and then mm-hmm. some kind of alert coming, you know, interrupting what you're listening to says, hey, watch out.
Stop looking at the sidewalk. Look up.
Yeah, maybe just nags you. Like, watch where you're going.
You're going to get hit if you act this way any longer.
All right, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
The past couple of days, if you missed the show, go back and listen to them. We have covered all of the major announcements at CES, all the things getting buzz, all the things that caught our eye. And today it's a nice chance to sort of take a step back and get a perspective on maybe some of the things we missed or some of the things we want to spend a little more time with. So we're asking Shannon and Bill to share some of the things that they've seen that have caught their eye. And Shannon, let's start with you. What have you been looking at?
Yeah. So have y'all heard about Celestron's new application that they were showing off at one of the press events?
Yeah, the telescope related thing. I heard about that.
It was really cool. I'm from like an astronomy background, so I was really excited about it. It's like live long and prosper. StarSense Explorer, that's the application name. And it's a application that teaches you and educates you about what's around us in the universe. But it also connects to a telescope. So it will help you really easily and really quickly find all of these different things in the sky and be able to see them through a telescope. It's really fascinating. Telescopes for the longest time, if you wanted really good lenses, they're insanely expensive. And if you want to bring those into like a classroom setting, or if you want to bring those home for kids, it's very hard to introduce that because it kind of prices people out of that market. So they're putting this information and this technology onto your phone. So when you purchase the telescope, you're only purchasing the lens and the metal. You're not purchasing motors or computerized parts. So that's keeping the price down for the telescope. The application itself is free and you could use it to like educate yourself. But what you're really getting is the ability to quickly and easily find things in the universe that you can look at through a telescope.
I mean, nothing will replace that father-son bonding I had of my dad going, no, Jupiter's right there. No, hold it right there. But I think this probably is progress.
It was really cool. So I definitely got a demo. I'm hoping I can get a review product so I can actually see it myself. It would be really fun. I'm sure you've probably mentioned the Alienware Concept UFO. I know you talked a little bit about that. That was something that I was really interested in. From my perspective, I'm not comparing it to a Nintendo Switch because it runs full Windows 10. I have this huge backlog of Steam video games that I've purchased throughout the 10, 15 years that I've been playing PC games. So the idea of being able to take that onto a remote device, even if you want to plug it into a larger monitor, maybe in my living room, for example, this is something that's really enabling me to take all that information with me. I don't have to it's like taking the old school LAN parties of gigantic PCs that you would tote with you to the local community center and instead sticking it in your pocket.
Yeah, bring the LAN with you.
Also, I want to run Doom on it and stick Linux on
course,
it because
obviously.
Why not?
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't I? The last one I wanted to mention as well was Asus. So they are doing some new PCs, mini PCs and hobbyist boards. The Tinkerboard R, and I believe the other one was called the T. But these are basically like comparable to Raspberry Pis. With Raspberry Pis, you have a lot of abilities. You can do like a pie hole or a home theater PC, et cetera, et cetera. This one can do facial recognition. You can run some awesome technology on it to do facial recognition. So like companies could use these, but you could also use it as a consumer trying to learn about boards and how you can do different open source software, how you can create your own home theater PC, how you can run like an audiophile device. Also, it's kind of limitless in the fact that Asus has the hardware capabilities to make it a lot more powerful than the Raspberry Pis currently are. So they're bringing a lot of that like hardware background that they have into these little boards. And I love that they're creating a more competitive marketplace for folks that are into Raspberry Pis and Arduinos and things of that nature.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see it. They have like a GitHub open source community. They have a forum. So lots of people seem to be pretty involved with this. And I'm excited to see how it grows. And I kind of want to play with one.
It's the Tinker, right?
Tinker, yes. The Tinker board.
Yeah, very cool. It's nice to have more of that nerdy stuff out there. For
I
sure.
agree.
Yeah. All right, Bill, what's been catching your eye here?
Well, you know, I focused on a lot of smart home and health and wellness tech this time around. And so there's always gadgets that you look at and you go, you know, that's really cool, but do I need one of those? A few of the things
yes,
I saw.
Yes, yeah, you do.
I mean, but I've always heard that's the worst question to ask at CES. Do you need it?
Right? Yeah.
Because usually the answer is no. But there's some cool products that I saw that Procter & Gamble had with some of their brands. Lumi was kind of this interesting product from their Pampers brand.
Okay.
It was this sensor that you put on the
diapers of newborns, allows you to track your newborn's movements, and then also detect whether their diaper is wet and to what percentage it's wet.
Yeah, so this is an advance. Like we've been watching the diaper get smarter every year at CES.
That's right. Now, and you would ask yourself,
when will it change the baby for
there,
you?
There you
that's
go.
Roger's question.
Yeah.
For sure.
I already know.
Well, and that's the exact question that you have to ask yourself, whether it's that or Charmin was also showing off their Go Lab at the PNG display, which showed off several bathroom techs, including a robot that delivered you toilet paper in the bathroom. I always ask myself, is it something you really kind of need? Like, they're going to market with Lumi. It's been around for a while, but they've got the final product here this year. Do you really need to know exactly how moist a diaper is down to the single digit percentage? I don't know. I have a 16-year-old daughter. I changed lots of diapers. I don't know if that would have made me a better parent or given her a healthier life.
No,
I don't know.
Tracking application of that. I don't think.
Well, there's movements. There's no, because then they couldn't say anything, you know, about it being a medical device. So there's a lot of things like that I look at that are kind of neat and cool. You know, we talked a little bit about sleep tech earlier. So Philips has the headband, which is kind of cool, designed to sort of wake you up more easily. There's always fun tech. I saw Keurig has their DrinkWorks system here. If you had a chance to see that, that is exactly right. So they're pods that basically make cocktails just like a Keurig makes coffee or tea. So if you want a Moscow Mule or a what did they make for us today?
Another
vodka lemonade. And so, you know, all the alcohol, the flavoring, everything is in the pod. You put it in the machine, hit the button, boom, you get a carbonated drink and chilled water if you need it. So that's kind of neat. I like that. $4 a drink is what it costs. Pods are recyclable. Do you need one of those? Well, I don't know if I need one of those, but it's kind of this neat smart gadget.
In fact, you may not need
one of those. You know, I don't know if I needed a smart beer fridge, but they have a smart beer fridge here. I also look for tech that's not just kind of you know, the tech that is maybe a little more meaningful, not to step on Keurig or anybody else's toes. But AARP had several demos here of tech like a Voice It system, which is really good. It helps people that can't vocalize. If they have motor neuron problems, motor problems, Parkinson's, things like this, and they can't vocalize speech.
That's great.
They can use AI to translate that speech into words.
That would have been great for my dad. My dad had that problem after his stroke. And some days were better than others. Yeah. It would have been amazing to have something.
And you think about, not only is that a way for those people to communicate with other people, but it also unlocks a lot of smart technology that's based on voice that can't do that they can't take advantage of. That's really cool. They were using AR in a really interesting way as well. They have an application that allows you to scan a room for potential physical hazards. And with my father, when we had home health come in and look, they just walked around and said, that's a fall risk. That rug is going to, you know, not convincing your parents to get rid of something is a whole other idea. But the AR application, you use a smartphone, a tablet to sort of pan around and it analyzes the images coming in and looks for physical risks. So those are amongst all the kind of crazy gadgets, the wacky Mercedes concept car with scales on it. You know, the new PS5 logo, really cool, but you know,
I love the five.
It's just a logo and there's a five. You do have some among Samsung's wacky neon, you know, whatever we're going to do with those things. You know, I do like that there's some sort of serious tech that'll have real differences and make a real difference in people's lives.
If there's one thing, there's always one thing that I wish we had more time to cover more in depth, it would be the water conservation tech. I saw a lot of that. We just didn't really get to it. Home water purification, water reuse, water saving, a lot of that kind of tech here as well.
And there was a company that had that was showing off growing crops in shipping containers. You know, you could have like 10 different crops rotating through these regular, you know, shipping containers. And you were talking about with water, pulling water out of the air. It's really cool stuff that I think oftentimes is eclipsed, unfortunately, by the really big TVs.
Well, we actually have time for some emails today, don't we?
Yeah, we do. So let's check out the mailbag. First one comes from Nathaniel. You know, in fact, we were talking about mesh routers being able to detect faults. And he says, I'm a residential electrician. I'm actually working on a home owned by an older couple. They asked me to troubleshoot, help with their Echo Dot setup. They're using it as a help I've fallen array. Good for contacting family members. You don't have to wear it 100% of the time anyway. And it can be programmed with local emergency numbers. Nathaniel says, I believe Echoes don't call 911. So be aware. You might need to add local first responders into the address book yourself. But I hope this helps someone with age or disability issues.
Oh, that's very cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Well, let's give a shout out to our patrons at the Master and Grandmaster level, including Jeff Wilkes, Sonia Vining, and Tony Glass. Thank you all for supporting the show.
And thanks to Shannon Morris and Bill Detweiler for being with us on our last day of coverage at CES. Shannon, where do people keep up with your work?
YouTube.com/Shannon Morse, and that's MORSE, like Morse code, not Morris. I am covering CES every single day. I have multiple videos like ready to go, so definitely check out the channel, especially if you're interested in security and privacy, gaming products, laptops, and smart home as well, although I might make fun of them a little bit if they don't have very good security, of course, and Snubsy.com for everything else, especially ThreatWire, of course.
And Bill Detweiler, thank you, too, for being with us. The last day of CES, it's becoming a bit of a tradition.
Yeah, always glad to be here. It's always fun. I really enjoy it. So thank you, Tom and Shannon, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sarah. Absolutely. Yeah. And, well, Shannon, Sarah, you know, she's on enough. And thank Roger, too, while you're at it.
Roger. We won't forget about you, Roger.
But Bill, let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
Yeah, so they can see all of our enterprise coverage of CES and the tech space in general at Tech Republic and ZDNet. You can see the consumer work that we do, including cracking open at CNET. We'll be actually cracking open a TV and a Rizmo on the CNET stage live tomorrow, so that should be fun. And people can follow me at Twitter at Bill Detweiler.
Yeah, and thanks to Bill and the folks at Tech Republic's good graces. You can catch a little bit of me there on the top five videos as well. So check that out, techrepublic.com. Thanks to everyone who supports the show. We're able to be here and talk to these folks in person and see this stuff ourselves, bring you some video on the Patreon and on our Instagram because you guys support the show. So everybody who supports the show on Patreon, thank you for making this possible. Patreon.com/DTNS if you want to join in.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Thanks for giving us so much good feedback on our coverage here. We've had a really good time, and we hope you have too. We will be live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC, back on our home bases starting tomorrow. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
See you tomorrow with Justin Robert Young.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.